kids. Mr. Bowditch was all set for the apocalypse. Radar gave a don't-forget-the-dog whine. I looked behind the door, and there was her plastic food canister. It had to hold 10 or 12 gallons full, but the bottom was barely covered. If Bowditch was in the hospital for a few days or even a week, I would have to buy more. The cup measure was in the canister. I filled it and poured the kibble into the dish with her name on it. Radar went at it with a will, tail wagging slowly from side to side. She was old, but still happy to eat. I guess that was good. "You take it easy now," I said, pulling on my jacket. "Be a good girl, and I'll see you in the morning." Only it wasn't that long. 4. Dad and I pigged on Chinese food, and I gave him the expanded version of my afternoon adventure, starting with Bowditch on the steps, progressing to the Hall of Old Reading Matter, and finishing with the Doomsday Pantry.
"Hoarder," Dad said. "Seen my share of it, usually after the hoarder in question dies. But the place is clean, you say?"
I nodded. "The kitchen, at least. A place for everything and everything in its place. There was some dust on the old medicine bottles in the little bathroom, but I didn't see any anywhere else."
"No car?"
"Nope, and not room for one in his tool shed."
"He must have his groceries delivered. And, of course, there's always Amazon, which by 2040 will be the world government the right-wingers are so afraid of. I wonder where his money comes from. How much is left?"
I wondered that, too. I think that kind of curiosity is pretty normal in people who have come within a whisker of going broke. Dad got up.
"I bought and carried. Now I need to clear some paperwork. You clean up."
I cleaned up, then practiced some blues tunes on my guitar. I could play almost anything, just as long as it was in the key of E. Usually I could get into the music until my fingers hurt, but not that night. I put my Yamaha back in the corner and told Dad I was going up to Mr. Bowditch's house to check on Radar. I kept thinking of her being there all by herself. Maybe dogs didn't care about such things, but maybe they did.
"Fine, as long as you don't decide to bring it back."
"Her."
"Okay, but not interested in listening to a lonely dog howl at 3 in the morning, no matter what sex it happens to be."
"I won't bring her back." He didn't need to know that the idea had, at least, crossed my mind.
"And don't let Norman Bates get you."
I looked at him, surprised.
"What, you think I didn't know?"
He was grinning.
"People were calling it the Psycho House long before you and your friends were born, little hero."
5. That made me smile, but it was harder to see the humor when I got to the corner of Pine and Sycamore. The house seemed to hulk on its hill, blotting out the stars. I remembered Norman Bates saying,
"Mother, so much blood,"
and wished I'd never seen that damn movie. The gate bolt was easier to pull, at least. I used my phone's flashlight to walk around the house. I ran my flash over the side of it once and wished I hadn't. The windows were dusty, all the shades pulled. Those windows looked like blind eyes that were somehow still seeing me and not liking my intrusion. I rounded the corner, and as I started toward the back porch, there was a thump. It startled me, and I dropped my phone. As it fell, I saw a moving shadow. I didn't cry out, but I felt my balls crawl and pull up tight against my scrot. I froze as that shadow rippled toward me, and then before I could turn and run, Radar was whining and nosing at the leg of my pants and trying to jump up on me. Because of her bad back and hips, all she could do was make a series of abortive lunges. The thump must have been the dog door swinging shut. I dropped to my knees and grabbed her, one hand stroking her head while the other scratched her ruff under the collar. She licked my face and crammed against me so tight that she almost tipped me over.
"It's okay," I said.
"Were you scared to be alone?"
"I bet you were."
And when was the last time she had been alone, if Mr. Bowditch didn't have a car and all his groceries were delivered? Maybe not for a long time.
"That's okay. All good. Come on."
I picked up my phone, gave my balls a second to settle back into their proper place, then went to the back door with her walking so close behind me that her head kept bumping my knee. Once upon a time, Andy Chen had encountered a monster dog in the front yard of this place, or so he said. But that was years ago. This was just a scared old lady who'd heard me coming and bolted out through her dog door to meet me. We went up the back porch steps. I unlocked the door and used the turn switch to light the hall of old reading matter. I checked the dog door and saw there were three small bolts, one on each side and another on top. I reminded myself to run them before I left so radar wouldn't go wandering. The backyard was probably fenced like the front one, but I didn't know that for sure, and for the time being, she was my responsibility. In the kitchen, I knelt in front of radar and stroked the sides of her face. She looked at me attentively, ears pricked. "I can't stay, but I'm going to leave a light on, and I'll come back tomorrow morning and feed you, okay?" She whined, licked my hand, and then went to her dish. It was empty, but she gave it a few licks and then looked at me. The message was pretty clear. "No more until morning," I said. She laid down and put her muzzle on her paw, never taking her eyes off me. Well, I went to the canister marked cookies. Mr. Bowditch had said no meat and no snacks, and I decided he could have meant no meat snacks. Semantics are wonderful, aren't they? I vaguely remembered hearing or reading somewhere that dogs are allergic to chocolate, so I took one of the pecan sandies and broke off a piece. I offered it. She sniffed, then took it delicately from my fingers. I sat down at the table where I'd done my studying, thinking I should just go. She was a dog, for Christ's sake, not a child. She might not like being alone, but it wasn't like she was going to get into the cabinet under the sink and drink bleach. My phone buzzed. It was Dad. "Everything okay there?" "Fine, but it's good I came. I left the dog door open." She came out when she heard me. No need to tell him that when I saw that moving shadow, I'd had a single flash of Janet Leigh in the shower, screaming and trying to avoid the knife.
"Oh, not your fault. You can't think of everything. Coming back?"
"Pretty soon." I looked at radar, looking at me. "Dad, maybe I should..."
"Bad idea, Charlie. You've got school tomorrow. She's a grown-up dog. She'll be fine overnight."
"Sure, I know." Radar got up, a process that was a little painful to watch. When she got her hindquarters under her, she walked off into the dark of what was probably the living room. "I'll just stay a few minutes. She's a nice dog."
"Okay."
I ended the call and heard a low squeaking sound. Radar came back with a toy in her mouth. I thought maybe it was a monkey, but it was so chewed it was hard to tell. I still had my phone in my hand, so I took a picture. She brought me the toy and dropped it by my chair. Her eyes told me what I was supposed to do. I gave it a soft lob across the room. Radar limped after it, picked it up, made it squeak a few times to show it who was boss, and brought it back. She plunked it down beside my chair. I could imagine her as a young dog, heavier and much more agile, going after that poor old monkey, or its predecessor, at a full tilt run, the way Andy said she'd run at him that day. Now her running days were over, but she was giving it her best shot. I could imagine her thinking, "See how good I am at this? Stick around, I can do it all night." Only she couldn't, and I couldn't stay. Dad wanted me home, and I doubted if I'd sleep much anyway if I stayed here. Too many mysterious creaks and groans, too many rooms where anything might be lurking and creeping toward me once the lights were out. Radar brought the squeaky monkey back. "No more," I said. "Rest up, girl." I started for the back hall, then had an idea. I went to the darkened room where Radar had found her toy and groped around for a switch, hoping nothing, Norman Bates' wrinkled mummy of a mother, for instance, would grab my hand. The switch made a clacking sound when I found it and flipped it. Like the kitchen, Mr. Bowditch's living room was old-timey but neat. There was a couch upholstered in dark brown fabric. It looked to me as if it hadn't had much use. Most of the sitting appeared to have been done in an easy chair, plonked down in the middle of an old-fashioned rag rug. I could see the divot made by Mr. Bowditch's skinny shanks, A blue chambray shirt was tossed over the back. The chair faced a TV that looked prehistoric. There was an antenna thing on top of it. I took a picture of it with my phone. I didn't know if a TV that ancient could possibly work, but judging by the books stacked on either side of it, many marked with post-it notes, it probably didn't get much use even if it did work. In the far corner of the room was a wicker basket piled high with dog toys. And that said all anyone would need to know about how much Mr. Bowditch loved his dog. Radar padded across the room and grabbed a stuffed rabbit. She brought it to me, looking hopeful. "I can't," I said. "But you can have this. It probably smells like your guy." I grabbed the shirt off the back of the chair and spread it on the kitchen floor beside her dish. She smelled it, then lay down on it. "Atta girl," I said. "See you in the morning." I started for the back door, thought again, and brought her the stuffed monkey. She gave it a chew or two, maybe just to please me. I backed off a few steps and took another picture with my phone. Then I left, not forgetting to bolt the dog door. If she messed inside, I would just have to clean it up. As I walked back home, I thought about gutters, no doubt plugged with leaves, the unmowed lawn. The place badly needed a paint job, and that was beyond me, but I could do something about those dirty windows, not to mention the sagging picket fence. If I had time, that was, and given the upcoming baseball season, I didn't. Plus, there was Radar. That was love at first sight. For her as well as for me, maybe. If the idea strikes you as weird or corny or both, all I can say is deal with it. As I said to my father, she was a nice dog. When I went to bed that night, I set my alarm for 5 a.m. Then I texted Mr. Neville, my English teacher, and told him I wouldn't be there, period one, and to tell Miss Friedlander that I might miss period two as well. I said I had to visit a guy in the hospital. Chapter 3. A hospital visit. Quitters never win. The shed. 1. The psycho house looked less psycho by the dawn's early light, although the mist rising from all that high grass did give it a gothic air. Radar must have been waiting because she began thudding against the bolted dog door as soon as she heard me on the steps, which were loose and spongy. Another accident waiting to happen, and another chore waiting for someone to do it. "Easy, girl," I said, putting the key in the lock. "You'll sprain something." She was all over me as soon as the door was open, jumping up and putting her front paws on my leg, arthritis be damned. She followed me into the kitchen and watched, tail wagging, as I scraped one last full cup from her diminishing food supply. While she ate, I texted Dad, and asked if he would stop by a place called Pet Pantry on his lunch hour or after work and pick up a bag of dog food. Origin Regional Red. Then I sent another, saying I'd pay him back and Mr. Bowditch would pay me. I considered and sent a third one. Better get a big bag. It didn't take me long, but Radar was already done. She brought me the monkey and dropped it beside my chair, then burped. "Excuse you," I said, and soft-tossed the monkey. She pounced and brought it back. I tossed it again, and while she was going after it, my phone binged. It was Dad. No problem. I gave her another toss, but instead of going after it, she limp-trotted down the hall of old reading matter and outside. Not knowing if there was a leash, I broke off another piece of pecan sandy to coax her back in if needed. I was pretty sure it would do the job. Radar was the original chow hound. Getting her in didn't turn out to be a problem. She squatted in one place to do her number one and another to do her number two. She came back, looked at the steps the way a mountaineer might look at a tough climb, then made her way halfway up. She sat for a moment, then managed the rest. I wasn't sure how long she'd be able to do that without help. "Gotta go," I said. "See you later, Gator." We'd never had a dog, so I didn't know how expressive their eyes could be. Especially up close and personal. Hers told me not to go. I would have been happy to stay, but as that poem says, I had promises to keep. I stroked her a few times and told her to be good. I remembered reading somewhere that a dog ages 7 years for each one of ours. Just a rule of thumb, surely, but at least a way to figure. And what did that mean to a dog, time-wise? If I came back at 6 to feed her, that would be about 12 hours of my time. Would that be 84 hours for her? 3.5 days? If so, no wonder she was so happy to see me. Plus, she had to be missing Mr. Bowditch. I locked the door, went down the steps, and looked toward the place where she'd done her business. Policing the backyard was another chore that could use doing. Unless Mr. Bowditch had done it himself. With all that high grass, it was impossible to tell. If he hadn't, somebody should. You're somebody, I thought, as I went back to my bike. Which was true, but as it happened, I was a busy somebody. In addition to baseball, I was thinking of trying out for the end-of-the-year play, High School Musical. I had fantasies of singing Breaking Free with Gina Pasquarelli, who was a senior and gorgeous. A woman bundled up in a tartan coat was standing by my bike. I thought she was Mrs. Ragland, or maybe it was Reagan.
"Are you the one who called the ambulance?" she asked.
"Yes, ma'am," I said.
"How bad is he, Bowditch?"
"I don't really know. He broke his leg, for sure."
"Well, that was your good deed for the day. Maybe for the year. He's not much of a neighbor, keeps mostly to himself, but I've nothing against him. Except for the house, which is an eyesore. You're George Reed's son, aren't you?"
"That's right." She held out her hand.
"Althea Richland."
I shook with her. "Pleased to meet you."
"What about the mutt? That's a scary dog, a German shepherd. He used to walk him early mornings and sometimes after dark when the kids were inside."
She pointed to the sadly sagging picket fence.
"That certainly wouldn't hold him."
"It's a her, and I'm taking care of her."
"That's very good of you. I hope you won't get bitten."
"She's pretty old now and not mean."
"To you, maybe," Mrs. Richland said. "My father had a saying, an old dog will bite twice as hard. A reporter from that rag of a weekly came by and asked me what happened. I think he's the one who does the call-outs, police, fire, ambulance, that kind of thing."
She sniffed.
"He looked about your age."
"I'll keep that in mind," I said, not knowing why I should. "I better get going, Mrs. Richland. I want to visit Mr. Bowditch before school." She laughed.
"If it's Arcadia, visiting hours don't start until 9. They'll never let you in this early."
2. They did, though. Explaining that I had school and baseball practice after didn't quite convince the lady at the front desk, but when I told her I was the one who had called the ambulance, she told me I could go up.
"Room 322, elevators are on your right."
Halfway down the third floor hall, a nurse asked me if I was here to see Howard Bowditch. I said I was, and asked how he was doing.
"He's had one operation, and he's going to need another. Then he'll be facing a fairly long period of convalescence, and he'll need a lot of physical therapy. Melissa Wilcox will probably be the one to take that on. The leg break was a particularly bad one, and he also pretty much destroyed his hip. It will need a replacement. Otherwise, he'll be spending the rest of his life on a walker or in a wheelchair, no matter how much therapy he does."
"Jeez," I said. "Does he know?"
"The doctor who set the break will have told him what he needs to know right now." "You called the ambulance?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Well, you may have saved his life. Between the shock and possibly spending a night outdoors?"
She shook her head. "It was the dog. I heard his dog howling."
"Did the dog call 911?
I admitted that had been me.
"If you want to see him, you better go on down. I just gave him a shot for pain, and it will probably put him under before long. Broken leg and hip aside, he's severely underweight. Easy pickings for osteoporosis. You might get 15 minutes before he's off to see the wizard."
3. Mr. Bowditch's leg was up in a pulley contraption that looked straight out of a 1930s comedy movie, only Mr. Bowditch wasn't laughing. Neither was I.
The lines on his face looked deeper, almost carved. The dark circles under his eyes were darker. His hair appeared lifeless and thin, the red streaks in it looking faded. I guess he had a roommate, but I never saw him because a green drape was drawn across the other half of 322. Mr. Bowditch saw me and tried to straighten up in his bed, which made him grimace and hiss out a breath.
Hello there. What's your name again? If you told me, I don't remember. Which, given the circumstances, might be forgivable.
I couldn't remember if I had either, so I gave it again, or for the first time, then asked how he was feeling.
Extremely shitty. Just look at me.
I'm sorry.
Not as sorry as I am.
Then, with an effort to be civil,
thank you, young Mr. Reed. They tell me you may have saved my life. It doesn't feel like it's worth much just now, but as the Buddha supposedly said, it changes. Sometimes for the better, although in my experience that's rare.
I told him, as I had my father, the EMTs and Mrs. Richland, that it was really the dog who had saved him. If I hadn't heard her howling, I would have biked on by.
How is she?
Fine. I took a chair by his bed and showed him the pictures I'd taken of Radar with her monkey. He went back and forth between them several times. I had to show him how to do that. The pics made him seem happier, if not necessarily any healthier.
Facing a long period of convalescence, the nurse had said.
When he handed the phone back, the smile was gone.
They haven't told me how long I'm going to be in this damn sick bay, but I'm not stupid. I know it's going to be a while. I guess I need to think about putting her down. She's had a good life, but now her hips are...
Geez, don't do that, I said, alarmed. I'll take care of her. Happy to do it. He looked at me, and for the first time his expression wasn't one of irritation or resignation.
You do that? Can I trust you to do that?
Yes. She's almost out of food, but my dad's getting a bag of that Origin stuff today. 6 morning, 6 evening. I'll be there. Count on it. He reached for me, maybe meaning to take my hand, or at least give it a pat. I would have allowed it, but he pulled his hand back.
That's very good of you.
I like her, and she likes me.
Does she? Good. She's not a bad old pal.
His eyes were getting glassy, his voice a little slurry. Whatever the nurse had given him was starting to work.
No harm in her, but she used to scare the shit out of the neighborhood kids, which I appreciated. Nosy little brats, most of them. Nosy and noisy. As for burglars, forget it. If they heard Radar, they'd head for the hills. But now she's old.
He sighed, then coughed. It made him wince.
And she's not the only one.
I'll take good care of her, maybe walk her down the hill to my place. His eyes sharpened a little as he considered this possibility.
She's never been in anyone else's since I got her as a pup. Just my house, the yard.
Mrs. Richland said you took her on walks.
The nosy Parker across the street. Well, yes, she's right. We did go on walks when Radar was able to go without getting tired. I'd be afraid to take her any distance now. What if I got her down Pine Street and she couldn't make it back?
He looked down at himself.
Now I'm the one who couldn't make it back. Couldn't make it anywhere.
I won't push her, you know, overtax her. He relaxed.
I'll pay you for what she eats. And for your time, that too.
Don't worry about it.
She might be okay for a while yet when I get home. If I get home.
You will, Mr. Bowditch.
If you're going to feed her, Better call me Howard.
I didn't know if I could do that, but I agreed.
Maybe bring me another picture?
Sure. I better go, Mr. Howard. You should rest up.
No choice.
His eyes slipped closed. Then the lid slowly came up again.
Whatever she gave me, high-tension stuff.
His eyes closed again. I got up and headed for the door.
Boy, what was your name again?
Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie. I thought maybe give her another chance. Not for me. Oh, once was enough for me. Life gets to be a burden. If you live long enough, you'll find that out for yourself.
But her? Radar. And then I got old and fell off the fucking ladder.
I'll bring you some more pictures.
You do that.
I turned to go, and then he spoke again, but I don't think it was to me.
A brave man helps. A coward just gives presents.
He fell silent and began to snore. Halfway down the hall, I saw the nurse I'd spoken to coming out of a room with what looked like a bag of cloudy pee. She saw me and put a towel over it. She asked if I'd had a nice visit. Yes, but he wasn't making much sense by the end. She smiled. Demerol will do that. Go on now. You should be in school. 4. By the time I got to Hillview, period 2 had been going on for 10 minutes and the halls were empty. I went to the office to get an excused late slip from Mrs. Silvius, a nice old lady with scary blue hair. She had to be at least 75, long past the usual retirement age, but still plenty sharp and good-humored. I think good humor must be necessary when you're dealing with teenagers.
I hear you saved a man's life yesterday, she said as she signed the slip.
Who told you that?
A little birdie. Tweet, tweet, tweet. Word gets around, Charlie.
I took the slip. It really wasn't me. It was the guy's dog. I heard her howling. I was getting tired of telling people this because nobody believed me, which was strange. I thought everyone liked stories about hero dogs. I just called 911.
Whatever you say. Now run along to class.
Can I show you something first?
Only if it's a speedy something.
I took out my phone and showed her the picture I'd snapped of Mr. Bowditch's TV. That's an antenna on top, right?
Rabbit ears, we called them,
Mrs. Silvia said. Her smile was very similar to the one Mr. Bowditch had worn when he was looking at the pictures of Radar with her monkey.
We used to put tin foil on the tips of ours because it was supposed to improve the reception. But look at the television, Charlie, my goodness, does it actually work?
I don't know, I didn't try it.
The first TV we ever had looked like this, a table model Zenith. It was so heavy, my father strained his back carrying it up the steps to the apartment we lived in back then. We watched that thing by the hour. Annie Oakley, Wild Bill Hickok, Captain Kangaroo, Crusader Rabbit. Gosh, until we got headaches. And once it wouldn't work, the picture just rolled and rolled, so my dad called a TV repairman who came with a suitcase full of tubes.
Tubes?
Vacuum tubes. They glowed orange like old-fashioned light bulbs. He replaced the one that had gone bad, and it worked fine again.
She looked at the picture on my phone once more.
Surely the tubes for this one would have burned out long ago.
Mr. Bowditch probably bought more on eBay or Craigslist, I said. You can buy anything on the internet, if you can afford it, that is. Only I didn't think Mr. Bowditch did internet. Mrs. Silvius handed my phone back.
Go along, Charlie. Physics awaits you.
5. Coach Harkness was on me that afternoon at practice like white on rice, or more accurately like flies on shit, because shit was how I played. During the three-cone footwork drill, I kept moving the wrong way, and once I tried to move both ways at once, and ended up on my ass, which caused much hilarity. During the double play drill, I got caught off my position at first, and the ball from the second baseman went whizzing past where I should have been and ended up bouncing off the gym wall. When coach hit me a dribbler up the line, I charged the ball okay, but didn't get my glove down, and the ball, just a bunny rolling at walking speed, went through my legs. But bunting was the final straw for Coach Harkness. I kept popping it up to the pitcher instead of laying one down along the third baseline. Coach erupted from his lawn chair and stalked to the plate with his belly swinging and his whistle bouncing between his not inconsiderable breasts.
"Jesus Christ, Reed, you look like an old lady. Stop punching at the ball. Just get the bat down and let the ball hit it. How many times do I have to tell you?"
He grabbed the bat, elbowed me aside, and faced Randy Morgan, that day's tryout pitcher.
"Throw, and put some goddamn hair on it."
Randy threw as hard as he could. Coach bent and laid down a perfect bunt. It trickled along the third baseline just fair. Steve Dombrowski charged it, tried for a bare hand pickup, and lost the handle. Coach turned to me.
"There! That's how it's done. I don't know what's on your mind, but get rid of it."
What was on my mind was radar, back at Mr. Bowditch's house, waiting for me to come. 12 hours for me, maybe 3.5 days for her. She wouldn't know why she'd been left alone. And a dog couldn't play with the squeaky monkey if there was no one there to throw it. Was she trying not to make a mess in the house, or with the dog door bolted? Had she done it already somewhere? If so, she might not understand that it wasn't her fault. Plus the scraggy lawn and the sagging picket fence. Those things were on my mind, too. Coach Harkness handed me the bat.
"Now lay one down and do it right."
Randy didn't try to drill it in there, just threw a batting practice pitch to get me off the hook. I squared around and popped it up. Randy didn't even have to get off the practice mound to glove it.
"That's it," Coach said. "Give me 5.
Meaning 5 laps around the gym. No. All the chatter in the gym died. Both in our half and the girls' volleyball half. Everyone was watching. Randy put his glove over his mouth, maybe to hide a smile. Coach put his hands on his meaty hips.
"What did you just say to me?"
I didn't drop the bat because I wasn't mad. I just held it out to him, and in his amazement, he took it. I said, "No, I'm done." I started for the door that led to the lockers.
"Get back here, Reed."
I didn't even shake my head, just kept going.
"You come back now, not when you cool down, because then it'll be too late."
But I was cool. Cool and calm. Happy, even. Like when you see the solution to a troubling math problem isn't half as hard as it looked at first.
"God damn it, Reed."
He sounded a little panicked now. Maybe because I was his best hitter, or maybe because this rebellion was happening in front of the rest of the team.
"Get back here! Winners never quit, and quitters never win!"
"Then call me a loser," I said. I went down the stairs to the locker room and changed up. That was the end of my baseball career at Hillview High. And did I regret it? No. Did I regret letting my teammates down? A little, but as Coach was fond of pointing out, there's no I in team. They would have to get along without me. I had other business to take care of. 6. I got the mail out of Mr. Bowditch's box, nothing personal, just the usual dandruff, and let myself in through the back door. Radar couldn't quite jump up on me, I guess she was having a bad day, so I took her gently by the front paws, lifted her, and placed them on my waist so I could stroke her upturned head. I gave a few to her graying muzzle for good measure. She made her careful way down the porch steps and did her business. Once again, she gave that assessing look to the porch steps before climbing them. I told her she was a good girl, and Coach Harkness would be proud. I tossed the squeaky monkey for her a few times and took some pictures. There were other squeakies in her toy basket, but the monkey was clearly her go-to. She followed me outside when I went to collect the fallen ladder. I carried it down to the shed, saw the heavy-duty padlock on the door, and just propped it under the eave. While I was doing it, Radar started to growl. She was crouched down 20 feet in front of the padlocked door, ears back and muzzle wrinkled.
"What is it, girl? If a skunk or a woodchuck got in there, I can't do anything about—"
From behind the door came a scratching, followed by a weird chittering noise that stood up the hair on the back of my neck. Not an animal sound. I'd never heard anything exactly like it. Radar barked, then whined, then backed away with her belly still on the ground. I felt like backing away myself, but instead, I whammed on the door with the side of my fist and waited. There was nothing. I could have chalked those sounds up to my imagination if not for Radar's reaction. But there was nothing I could do about it. In any case, the door was locked and there were no windows. I gave the door another wham, almost daring that weird sound to come again. It didn't, so I walked back to the house. Radar struggled to her feet and followed me. I looked back once and saw that she was looking back too.
7. I played monkey with Radar for a while. When she lay down on the linoleum and gave me a look that said, "All done," I called my dad and told him I'd quit baseball.
"I know," he said. "Coach Harkness already called me. He said things got a little hot, but he was willing for you to come back on the condition that you apologize first to him and then to the whole team. Because you let them down," he said. That was irritating, but also funny.
"Dad, it wasn't the state finals, just practice in the gym, and he was being a dick." Although, I was used to that, we all were. Coach H's picture could have been next to dick in the dictionary.
"So no apologizing, is that what I'm hearing?"
I could apologize for not having my head on straight, because it wasn't. I was thinking about Mr. Bowditch and Radar and this place. It's not falling down, but it's getting there. I could do a lot of stuff if I had time, and now I do. He took a few seconds to process that and then said,
"I'm not sure I understand why that feels necessary to you. Taking care of the dog, that I get, it's a mitzvah, but you don't know Bowditch from Adam." And what was I going to say to that? Was I going to tell my father that I'd made a deal with God?
Even if he was kind enough not to laugh, he probably would be, he'd tell me that sort of thinking was best left to children, evangelicals, and cable news-watching junkies who really believed some kind of magic pillow or diet would cure all their ills.
Worst-case scenario, he might think I was trying to lay claim to the sobriety he was working so hard to maintain.
There was something else, too. It was private. My thing.
"Charlie, still there?"
"I'm here. All I can say is I want to do what I can until he's back on his feet again." Dad sighed.
"He's not a kid who fell out of an apple tree and broke his arm. He's old. He may never get on his feet again."
"Have you thought about that?" I hadn't, and didn't see any reason to start.
"You know what they say in your program, one day at a time."
He chuckled.
"We also say the past is history and the future's a mystery."
"Good one, Dad. So are we okay with the baseball thing?"
"Yes, but making the All-State team at the end of the season would have looked good on your college apps. You know that, right?"
"I do."
"What about football? Are you thinking of dumping that too?"
"Not right now." At least when it came to football, I wouldn't have Coach Harkness to deal with. Mr. Bowditch may be better by the time practice starts in August.
"Or not."
"Or not," I agreed. "The future is a mystery."
"Indeed it is. When I think of that night your mother decided to walk down to the Zippy."
He trailed off. I couldn't think of anything to say either.
Do one thing for me, Charlie. A reporter from the Weekly Sun came by and asked for your contact info. I didn't give it to him, but I got his. He wants to interview you about saving Bowditch, human interest kind of deal. I think you should do it.
I didn't really save him. It was radar.
You can tell him that, but if the colleges you apply to have questions about why you quit baseball, an article like that...
I got it. Give me his number.
He did, and I put it in my contacts. You'll be home for dinner?
As soon as I give radar hers.
Good. I love you, Charlie.
I told him I loved him too, which was true. Good man, my dad. Had a hard time, but got through it. Not everyone does.
8. After I fed Radar and told her I'd be back tomorrow, bright and early, I walked down to the shed. I didn't really want to. There was something very unpleasant about that windowless little building in the encroaching dark of a chilly April evening, but I made myself do it. I stood in front of the padlocked door, listening. No scratching. No weird chittering sound like some alien creature in a science fiction movie. I didn't want to hit the door with my fist, so I made myself do it. Twice. Hard. Nothing. Which was a relief. I got on my bike, rode down Sycamore Street Hill, tossed my glove on the top shelf of my closet, then looked at it for a while before closing the door. It's a good game, baseball. There's nothing like coming up in the top of the ninth and socking one right up the gap, and nothing like riding home on the bus from an away game after a big win, everybody laughing and rowdy and grab-assing around. So, yeah, some regret, but really not a lot. I thought of that saying of the Buddha's, it changes. I decided there was a lot of truth in those two little words, a hell of a lot. I called the reporter guy. The Weekly Sun was a freebie which contained a few local interest news and sports stories buried in a shitload of ads. There was always a pile of them by the door of the Zippy with a sign saying, "Take one," to which some wit had added, "Take them all." The reporter's name was Bill Harriman. I answered his questions, once again giving Radar most of the credit. Mr. Harriman asked if he could snap a picture of the two of us.
"Gee, I don't know. I'd have to have Mr. Bowditch's permission, and he's in the hospital."
"Ask him tomorrow or the next day. Would you do that? I'll have to file the story soon if it's going to run in next week's issue."
"I will if I can, but I think he was scheduled for another operation. They might not let me visit him, and I really can't do it without his permission."
The last thing I wanted was for Mr. Bowditch to be mad at me, and he was the kind of guy who got mad easily. I looked up the word for people like that later on. It was misanthrope.
"Oh, understood, understood. Let me know one way or the other, as soon as you can. Hey, aren't you the kid who scored the winning touchdown against Stanford Prep in the Turkey Bowl last November?"
"That was me, but it wasn't like a SportsCenter top 10 play or anything. We were on their 2-yard line and I just punched it in." He laughed.
"Modest, I like that. Give me a call, Charlie."
I said I would, hung up, and went downstairs to watch some TV with my dad before studying. I wondered how Radar was doing. Okay, I hoped, getting used to a different routine. I thought of that saying of the Buddha's again. That was a good one to hold on to.
Chapter 4. Visiting Mr. Bowditch. Andy Chen. The Cellar. In other news. A hospital meeting. 1. When I showed up the next morning at number 1 Sycamore Street, Radar's greeting was exuberant but not as frenzied. That made me think she was getting used to the new order. She did the morning necessary, gobbled her breakfast, Dad had brought home a 25-pound sack of her chow, then wanted to play with the monkey. I still had some time when she tired of that, so I went into the living room to see if the vintage television worked. I wasted some time looking for the zapper, but, of course, Mr. Bowditch's idiot box was from the pre-zapper era of home entertainment. There were two big dials below the screen.
The one on the right had numbers on it, channels, I presumed, so I turned the one on the left. The hum from the TV wasn't as disturbing as the noises from the shed, but it was still a bit worrisome. I stepped back, hoping it wouldn't explode. After a while, the Today Show swam into view, Matt Lauer and Savannah Guthrie chatting it up with a couple of politicians. The picture wasn't 4K, it wasn't even 1K, but it was something, at least. I tried moving the antenna that Mrs. Silvius had called rabbit ears. I turned it one way, and the picture got better. Marginally better. I turned it the other way, and Today disappeared into a snowstorm. I looked behind the unit. The backing was full of small holes to let out the heat, which was considerable, and through them I saw the orange glow of tubes. I was pretty sure they were producing the humming sound. I snapped it off, wondering how annoying it must have been to get up every time you wanted to change the channel. I told Radar I had to go to school, but I needed another picture first. I handed her the monkey. "Do you mind holding that in your mouth? It's pretty cute." Radar was happy to oblige. 2. With no baseball practice, I got to the hospital by mid-afternoon. At the desk, I asked if Howard Bowditch was allowed to have visitors. A nurse had told me he was going to need another operation. The desk lady checked something on her monitor and told me I could go up and see. As I turned toward the elevators, she told me to wait up. She had a form for me to fill out. It was for my contact information, in case of emergency. The requesting patient was Howard Adrian Bowditch. My name had been filled in as Charles Reed, R-E-E-D. "You are him, aren't you?" the desk lady said. "Yes, but the last name is spelled wrong." I scratched it out and printed R-E-A-D-E. "He said for you to contact me? Doesn't he have anyone else, like a brother or sister? Because I don't think I'm old enough to make any big decisions, like if..." I didn't want to finish, and she didn't need me to. "He signed a DNR before he went up for surgery. A form like this is just if he needs you to bring him something." "What's a DNR?" She told me. It was nothing I really wanted to hear. She never answered my question about relatives, because she probably didn't know. Why would she? I filled out the form, with my home address, email address, and cell number. Then I went upstairs, thinking there was a double shitload of things I didn't know about Howard Adrian Bowditch. 3. He was awake, and his leg was no longer suspended, but judging by his slow speech and the glassy look in his eyes, he was pretty stoned.
"You again," he said,
which wasn't exactly "mighty glad to see you, Charlie."
"Me again," I agreed.
Then he smiled. If I'd known him better, I would have told him he should use it more often.
"Drag up a chair and tell me how you like the look of this."
There was a blanket up to his waist. He tossed it back, revealing a complex steel gadget that encased his leg from the shin to upper thigh. There were thin rods going into his flesh. The points of entry sealed off with little rubber gasket thingies that were dark with dried blood. His knee was bandaged and looked as big as a bread loaf. A fan of those thin rods went through the wrappings. He saw the expression on my face and gave a chuckle.
"Looks like an implement of torture from the Inquisition, doesn't it? It's called an external fixator."
"Does it hurt?" Thinking that was the stupidest question of the year, those stainless steel rods had to go right into his leg bones.
"I'm sure it would, but fortunately I have this."
He held up his left hand. In it was a gadget that looked like the sort of remote his old school TV didn't have.
"Pain pump. Supposedly, it allows me enough to damp down the pain, but not enough to get high. Only, since I've never used anything stronger than Emperin, I believe I'm high as a kite."
"I think maybe you are," I said. And this time he didn't just chuckle, he outright laughed. I laughed with him.
"Oh, it will hurt, I suppose."
He touched the fixator, which formed a series of metal rings around a leg so black with bruising it hurt just to look at it.
I was told by the doctor who attached it early this morning that devices like this were invented by the Russians during the Battle of Stalingrad.
Now he touched one of the thin steel rods just above the bloody gasket.
The Ruskies made these stabilizing rods out of bicycle spokes.
How long do you have to wear it?
6 weeks, if I'm lucky and heal well. 3 months, if I'm not so lucky. They gave me some fancy hardware. I believe titanium was involved, but by the time the fixator comes off, my leg will have frozen solid. Physical therapy will supposedly thaw it, but I'm told said therapy will involve considerable discomfort. As someone who knows who Nietzsche was, you might be able to translate that.
I think it means it'll hurt like hell. I was hoping for another laugh, a chuckle, at least, but he only produced a wan smile and gave the dope-delivering gadget a double click with his thumb.
I believe you're exactly right. If I'd been fortunate enough to shuffle off this mortal coil during the operation, I could have spared myself that considerable discomfort.
You don't mean that. His eyebrows, gray and bushy, drew together.
Don't tell me what I mean. It belittles me and makes you sound stupid. I know what I'm facing.
Then, almost grudgingly,
I'm grateful to you for coming to see me. How's radar?
Good. I showed him the new pictures I'd taken. He lingered over the one of radar sitting with her monkey in her mouth. At last, he handed my phone back. Would you like me to print one out for you? Since you don't have a phone, I can send it to.
I would indeed like that. Thank you for feeding her and for showing her affection. I'm sure she appreciates it. I do too.
I like her. Mr. Bowditch.
Howard.
Howard, right. I'd like to cut your grass, if that's okay. Is there a mower in that shed? His eyes turned wary, and he put the pain controller down on the bed.
No, there's nothing in that shed. Of use, that is.
Then why was it locked? Was a question I knew enough not to ask. Well, I'll bring ours up. We live just down the street. He sighed as if this was too much trouble for him to deal with. Given the day he'd put in, it probably was.
Why would you do that? For pay? Are you looking for a job?
No.
Then why?
I don't exactly want to talk about it. I bet there are things you don't want to talk about, am I right? The flower canister, for one, the shed, for another. He didn't chuckle, but his lips quirked.
Do right. Is it the Chinese thing? Save a man's life and you're responsible for him thereafter?
No. It was my father's life I was thinking about. Can we not go there? I'll cut your grass, and maybe I'll fix the fence out front too, if you want. He looked at me a long time, then with an insight that startled me a little.
If I say yes, will I be doing you a favor?
I smiled. Actually, you would be.
All right, fine. But a mower would take one chomp of that mess and die. There are a few tools in the cellar. Most of them are for shit, but there's a scythe that might cut it down to mowable size if you took the rust off and sharpened the blade. There might even be a whetstone on the workbench. Don't let radar go down the stairs. They're steep, and she might fall.
Okay. What about the ladder? What should I do with that?
It goes under the back porch. I wish I'd left it there. Then I wouldn't be here. Goddamn doctors with their goddamn bad news. Anything else?
Well, a reporter from the Weekly Sun wants to write a story about me. Mr. Bowditch rolled his eyes.
That rag? Are you going to do it?
My dad wants me to. He said it might help with my college apps.
It might, at that. Although, hardly the New York Crimes, is it?
The guy asked about a picture of me with radar. I said I'd ask you, but I figured you wouldn't want me to do that, which is okay with me.
Hero dog. Is that the angle he wants? Or the one you want?
I think she should get the credit, that's all. And she can't exactly bark for it. Mr. Bowditch considered.
All right. But I don't want him on the property. You stand with her on the walk. He can take his photo from the gate. Outside the gate.
He picked up the pain gadget and gave it a couple of pumps. Then, grudgingly, almost fearfully,
there's a leash hanging on a hook by the front door. Haven't used it in a long time. She might like a walk down the hill. On the leash, mind. If she got hit by a car, I'd never forgive you.
I said I understood that, and I sure did. Mr. Bowditch had no brothers, no sisters, no ex-wife, or one who'd passed on either. Radar was what he had.
And not too far. Once upon a time, she could walk 4 miles, but those days are gone. You better go. I think I'll sleep until they bring me a plate of the slop this place calls supper.
Okay. Good to see you. It actually was. I liked him. And I probably don't need to tell you why, but I will. I liked him because he loved radar. And I already did too. I got up, thought about patting his hand, didn't, and headed for the door.
Oh, Christ, there's another thing,
he said.
At least one that I can think of now. If I'm still here on Monday, and I will be, the groceries will come.
Delivery from Kroger's? He gave me that are you stupid look again.
Tiller and Sons.
I knew about Tiller, but we didn't shop there because it was what they call a gourmet market, meaning expensive. I had a vague memory of my mother getting me a birthday cake from there when I was 5 or 6. It had lemon frosting and cream between the layers. I thought it was the best cake in the world.
The man usually comes in the morning. Can you call them and tell them to postpone the delivery until the afternoon when you'll be there? They have the order.
Okay. He put a hand on his forehead. I wasn't sure because I was in the doorway, but I thought it was shaking a little.
And you'll have to pay. Can you also do that?
Sure. I'd have Dad give me a blank check and fill in the amount.
Tell them to cancel the weekly order after this one until they hear from me. Keep track of your expenses.
He ran his hand slowly down his face as if to smooth out the lines. A lost cause if there ever was one.
God damn. I hate being dependent. Why did I ever get up on that ladder? I must have been taking stupid pills.
You'll be fine, I said. But going down the hall to the elevators, I kept thinking of something he'd said when we were talking about the ladder. Goddamn doctors with their goddamn bad news. Probably he'd just been talking about how long it would take his goddamn leg to goddamn heal, and maybe having a goddamn physical therapist, probably a goddamn snoop in the bargain, in the house. But I wondered.
4.
I called Bill Harriman and told him he could take a picture of me and radar if he still wanted to. I told him Mr. Bowditch's conditions, and Harriman said that was fine.
Kind of a recluse, isn't he? I can't find anything about him in our files or in the beacon.
I wouldn't know. Does Saturday morning work for you? It did, and we agreed on 10 o'clock. I got on my bike and headed home, pedaling easy and thinking hard. First about radar, leash hanging in the front hall, deeper than I had yet penetrated the big old house. Now that I thought about it, there was no ID tag hanging on Radar's collar, which probably meant no dog license certifying her free of rabies or anything else. Had Radar ever been to the vet? I was guessing not. Mr. Bowditch had his groceries delivered, which struck me as a high-class way to get your beer and Skittles, and Tiller & Sons was certainly a high-class place where high-class people with a lot of folding green shopped.
which led me to wonder, as my father had, what Mr. Bowditch had done for a living before he retired. He had an elegant way of talking, almost like a professor, but I didn't think retired teachers could afford to shop in a market that boasted of having a step-down wine cellar. Old TV. No computer, I'd bet on that. And no cell phone. Also no car. I knew his middle name, but not how old he was. When I got home, I called Tiller and fixed the grocery delivery for 3 o'clock on Monday. I was thinking of taking my homework up to the Bowditch house when Andy Chen knocked on the back door for the first time in I didn't know how long. As little kids, Andy and I and Bertie Bird had been inseparable, even called ourselves the Three Musketeers. But Bertie's family had moved away to Dearborn, probably a good thing for me. And Andy was a brain who was taking a bunch of AP courses, including physics at the nearby branch of the University of Illinois. Of course, he was also a jock, excelling in two sports I didn't play. Tennis was one, the other was basketball, coached by Harkness, and I could guess why Andy was here. "Coach says you should come back and play baseball," Andy said, after checking our fridge for any tasty bites. He settled on some leftover Kung Pao chicken. "He says you're letting the team down." "Uh-oh, pack your bags, we're going on a guilt trip," I said. "I don't think so."
"He says you don't have to apologize."
"I wasn't planning on it."
"His brain's basically fried," Andy said.
"You know what he calls me? The Yellow Peril. As in, get out there, Yellow Peril, and guard that big bastard."
"You put up with that?"
I was both curious and horrified. "He thinks it's a compliment, which I find hilarious. Besides, 2 more seasons and I'll be out of Hillview and playing for Hofstra. Division I, here I come. Full ride, baby. I will be the Yellow Peril no more."
"Did you really save that old guy's life?"
"That's what I'm hearing at school."
"The dog saved him. I just called 911.
"It didn't rip your throat out?"
"No, she's a sweetie and she's old."
"She wasn't old the day I saw her. That day, she was out for blood.
Is it creepy inside? Stuffed animals, Kit Kat clock that follows you with its eyes? Chainsaw down cellar? Kids say he could be a serial killer."
"He's not a serial killer, and the house isn't creepy." That was true. It was the shed that was creepy. That weird scuttering sound had been creepy. And Radar, she knew that sound had been creepy too.
"Okay," Andy said. "I gave you the message. Got anything else to eat? Cookies?"
"Nope." The cookies were at Mr. Bowditch's house. Chocolate marshmallow and pecan sandies that had surely come from Tiller and Sons.
"Okay. Later, dude."
"Later, Yellow Peril." We looked at each other and broke up laughing. For a minute or two, it was like we were 11 again. 5. On Saturday, I got my picture taken with Radar. There was, indeed, a leash in the front hall, hanging next to a winter coat with a pair of old-fashioned galoshes beneath it. I thought about going through the pockets of the coat, just to see what I might see, you know, and told myself not to be a snoop. There was a spare collar attached to the leash, but no license tag. As far as town government knew, Mr. Bowditch's dog was flying, under the radar. We went down the path out front and waited for Bill Harriman to show up. He did so on the dot, driving a beat-up old Mustang and looking like he maybe graduated from college the year before. Radar gave a few token growls when he parked and got out. I told her he was okay, and she quieted down, only sticking her nose through the rusty gate to give his pants leg a sniff. She growled again when he stuck his hand over the gate for a shake with me.
"Protective," he observed.
"I guess she is." I expected him to have a big camera. I probably got the idea from some Turner Classic movie about crusading newspaper reporters, but he took our picture with his phone. After 2 or 3, he asked if she'd sit.
"If she will, take a knee beside her. That'd be a good one. Just a boy and his dog."
"She's not mine," I said, thinking she actually was, for the time being, anyway. I told Radar to sit, not knowing if she would. She did, right away, as if just waiting for the command. I got down beside her. I noticed Mrs. Richland had come out to watch with her hand shading her eyes.
"Put your arm around her," Harriman said.
When I did, Radar licked my cheek. It made me laugh. And that was the picture that appeared in the next issue of The Sun. And not just there, as it turned out.
"What's it like in the house?" Harriman asked, pointing to it.
I shrugged. "Like any other house, I guess, normal." Not that I knew, having only seen the hall of old reading matter, the kitchen, the living room, and the front hall.
"Nothing out of the ordinary, then? Because it looks spooky."
I opened my mouth to say the TV was from before the days of cable, let alone streaming, then closed it again. It occurred to me that Harriman had progressed from picture-taking to interviewing. Trying to, at least. As a newbie, he wasn't exactly subtle.
"Nope, it's just the house. I better get going. Will you be taking care of the dog until Mr. Bowditch gets out of the hospital?"
This time I was the one who stuck out my hand. Radar didn't growl, but watched closely for any funny business.
"Hope the pictures are okay. Come on, Radar."
I started toward the house. When I looked back, Harriman was crossing the street to talk to Mrs. Richland. There was nothing I could do about that, so I went around back with Radar coming along at my heel. I noticed that after walking for a bit, she limbered up. I put the ladder under the back porch, where there was also a snow shovel and a big old pair of gardening shears that looked as rusty as the bolt on the gate and would probably be just as hard to operate. Radar peered down at me from halfway up the steps, which was cute enough for me to take another picture. I was getting foolish about her. I knew it and didn't mind owning it. There were cleaning products under the kitchen sink and a neat pile of paper grocery bags with the Tiller logo on them. There were also rubber gloves. I put them on, took a bag, and went on poop patrol. Got plenty, too. On Sunday, I put Radar on her leash again and walked her down the hill to our house. She moved slowly at first, both because of her arthritic hips and because she clearly wasn't used to being away from home. She kept looking at me for reassurance, which touched my heart. After a while, though, she began to make her way more easily and confidently, stopping to sniff telephone poles and to squat here and there so other passing dogs would know that Radar of Bowditch had been there. Dad was home. Radar initially shrank back from him, growling, but when Dad held out his hand, she came forward enough to sniff it. Half a slice of bologna sealed the deal. We stayed for an hour or so. Dad quizzed me about my photo shoot and laughed when I told him how Harriman had tried to interview me about the inside of the house and how I'd shut him down.
"He'll get better if he sticks with the news business," Dad said. "The Weekly Sun is just the place where he starts building his clipbook."
By then, Radar was snoozing beside the couch where Dad had once passed out drunk. He bent down and ruffled her fur.
"I bet she was an engine when she was in her prime."
I thought of Andy's story about the terrifying beast he'd encountered 4 or 5 years earlier, and agreed.
"You should see if he has any dog meds for her arthritis, and probably she should have a tablet for heartworm."
"I'll check around." I had taken off her leash, but now I clipped it to her collar. She raised her head. "We should go back."
"Don't want to keep her here for the day? She looks pretty comfortable."
"No, I should take her back." If he asked why, I'd tell him the truth, because I didn't think Howard Bowditch would like it. He didn't ask.
"Okay. Want a ride?"
"That's all right. I think she'll be fine if we go slow." And she was. On the way back up the hill, she seemed glad to be sniffing grass that wasn't her own. 6. On Monday afternoon, a neat little green van with Tiller and Sons painted on the side, in gold, no less, pulled up. The driver asked me where Mr. Bowditch was. I told him, and he handed the bags to me over the gate, as if that were the usual thing, so I guess it was. I filled in the amount on the blank check Dad had signed, pretty horrified at the idea of 105 scoots for 3 bags of groceries, and handed it back. There were lamb chops and ground sirloin, which I put in the freezer. I wasn't going to eat his food, cookies accepted, but I wasn't going to let it go to waste either.
With that taken care of, I went down cellar, closing the door behind me so radar wouldn't try to follow. It wasn't the least bit serial killerish, only musty and dusty as if nobody had been down there for a long time. The overhead lights were fluorescent bars, one of them flickery and half dead. The floor was rough cement. There were tools on pegs, including the scythe, which looked like the kind of thing Old Man Death carries in the cartoons. In the center of the room was a work table covered by a drop cloth. I lifted it for a peek and saw a partially assembled jigsaw puzzle that appeared to have a zillion pieces. From what I could see, there was no box to check it against, it was meant to be a mountain meadow with the Rockies in the background. There was a folding chair set up at one end of the table, where most of the remaining pieces were spread out. The seat was dusty, from which I deduced that Mr. Bowditch hadn't been working his puzzle for quite some time. Maybe he'd given up. I know I would have. A lot of what was left to be assembled was plain old blue sky without even a single cloud to break the monotony. I'm talking about this at more length than it deserves, maybe. But then again, maybe not. There was something sad about it. I couldn't express the reason for that sadness then, but I'm older now and think I can. It was about the jigsaw, but it was also the antique TV and the hall of old reading matter. It was about an elderly man's solitary pursuits. And the dust, on the folding chair, on the books and magazines, suggested that even those were winding down. The only things in the cellar that looked like they were used regularly were the washer and dryer. I fluffed the cover back over the puzzle and checked out a cabinet between the furnace and the water heater. It was old-fashioned, full of drawers. I found screws in one, pliers and wrenches in another, stacks of rubber-banded receipts in a third, chisels and what had to be a whetstone in the fourth. I put the whetstone in my pocket, grabbed the scythe, and went upstairs. Radar wanted to jump on me, and I told her to stand clear so I didn't accidentally poke her with the blade. We went out back, where I knew I could get four bars on my phone. I sat on the steps, and Radar sat beside me. I opened